Ron Ananian.
It's just very, very important to be aware of, you know, step by step. Stay with what works.
The Car Doctor.
If it's got spark and the fuel pump's running and it still doesn't start and you've got cranking RPM, then I'm thinking for some reason the injectors aren't driving.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
And actually, no, here's not Ronnie, because Ron forgot to do something at the studio. Ron, you've got to walk around the corner and turn your microphone up and then come back and talk to us.
Oh, you mean like that, Tom?
Yeah, you know, sound works a lot better on radio.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm looking around, I'm going, there's something I forgot to do today. And
you know what? I'm sitting here staring at it going, huh, Julian's down. Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Welcome to the world of MedCap Radio. So I tell you, Tom, I really am. I'm sitting here, I'm going, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you think you left the house without your pants on. And I'm going, I know there's something I forgot to do today, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
And I go, guess what? We found it.
We found it. So, well, you know what? It's funny. I knew as soon as I started talking, because the way it plays back in my headset, I said, oops, something's up. So let's...
You were singing the sounds of silence, right?
Yeah, I could just tell. You know, because your headset sounds different when it's not on air. And you can just tell. Like, I'm looking around going, wait a minute. This isn't right. Something's not right. So how are you, Tom? Let me say hello to you today, as long as I got you. Did you have a good morning so far?
Yeah, it's not bad. Not all bad. Right. I've been sitting here and the sun just came out, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course the dog is sitting here sleeping at my feet. So
I don't know where Lucy is. She's not around the studio today. I think she's passed out in the other room. So, but anyway,
you wore her out this morning.
Yeah, I wore her out. She was, we took her out in the yard at the house and she was chasing the ball. So that kind of wore her out. She's a ball fanatic, but pit bulls are. So, hey, listen, you want to do some radio? Maybe it's time I should start taking car questions, because I got a feeling we got a busy day today. What do you say?
Yeah, we got calls. We got all kinds of stuff. So go ahead and knock yourself out.
Take me over to Randy in Michigan. Randy, welcome to the Car Doctor, now that everything's working. You see how we have to diagnose things? Even radio doesn't work right sometimes. What's going on, Randy? How can I help?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Ron.
You're welcome.
Fan of the show. I just found you this year.
Thank you, sir.
Glad to be on. This Ram in overdrive. Seems like no matter what speed, it has a hesitation, and I can tell that the RPMs are kind of going up and down, up and down. And then I come to a small grade, you know, like an uphill grade, and then it kind of goes up and then down, and then it's like perfect. But then when I get on a straightaway, you know, no grade, it just starts going up and down, and there's been a handful of times where I'll be at a stoplight, and then it'll be my turn to go, and I'll just push the gas to get through the light, and all of a sudden it just launches.
Right.
And I'm like, what's going on? And I know you're a big fan of diagnoses, you know, and checking out the problem. And I've actually taken it to three different people, and one guy thought, he just low on transmission fluid, so I made sure that was full. That wasn't it. My neighbor is a mechanic. He owns his own shop, and he goes, is the check engine light on? I said, nope. He goes, Dad, don't worry about it. Just drive it. Well, it bugs me.
Yeah, I would
actually had another guy. Actually had the other guy. He actually rode with me, and he felt that in overdrive, you know, going up and down, about 100, you know, RPMs. And he goes, oh yeah, it's supposed to do that. It's going from 8. You know, cylinders to 6 cylinders to save you gas. I go, why does it keep doing it? I mean, it's like doing it all the time.
Well, so what you're saying is this is a multiple cylinder displacement on off setup. Which engine is this, Randy?
5.7.
This is a 5.7. So
I didn't even know they did it, but I didn't even know they made the vehicles back then like that. He said they did, but of course since then he's retired, so I can't tell him, you know, hey, you were wrong. But
yeah. So listen, let's diagnose it. You're right. I like to diagnose things. I like to know what's going on. Just because there's no check engine light doesn't mean that there's not going to be a fault in the vehicle. Obviously, we had one just 2 weeks ago. As a matter of fact, it was a 13 Dodge Ram. It wouldn't set any fault codes, but when the vehicle went into overdrive, the trans would actually run normal, act normal, and you wouldn't even notice it. And then after about 3 minutes, running the same, never changing a beat, all the PIDs looked the same, data stream looked normal, all of a sudden it would pop a trans fault, I believe a P0743, if I remember right. And what it ended up being is what I think is partially your problem as well, or where I would be concerned. That vehicle had a problem with the torque converter. The converter, the clutch facings inside the converter were glazed, and it chattered. Does it feel like a clutch chatter if it was a manual transmission and you let it out and the clutch was glazed, that it's not grabbing smoothly against the flywheel, that kind of a stutter or chatter, as minute as it might be? Randy?
The one mechanic that rode with me, and he says, you only hear it now because you have an aftermarket exhaust. You know, I got Flowmaster on here.
Right.
And it's in, and actually the tailpipes kind of fell off, so it's just right there at the muffler. And it is pretty loud. But I'm like, man, I didn't notice it this bad when I had the quieter exhaust system on it. And also, I think it was last year when it was real hot out, the engine light did come on, and it ran beautifully. I'm like, please don't go out. Before I could get it to, you know, somebody to scan it, the light went back off.
All right, well, wait a minute now, Randy. Is this a stutter? Is this a sensation? Or is this a sound? Close your ears. Do you experience it?
Ooh, that's a good one right there. I think I hear it more than I feel it.
Okay. So is it that if you drove around in drive, I imagine your transmission has probably two drive and then drive with a circle, or is it 1, 2, 3 drive? What is it? What does the dashboard look like, the shift indicators? Is there a drive and a drive with a circle option?
Oh, you know what? Man, I'd love to go look at it real quick.
Well, hang on a second, because we're going to run out of time. Can you lock out overdrive? Can you keep the vehicle out of overdrive and it runs normal?
Yes.
Okay. So what I'd like to know a couple of basic things, and most of you know what I'm going to say. Where does fuel trim go when does fuel trim change? If you look at misfire counts, do you physically see any misfire counts increase or exist? Is there a difference in misfiring that the engine is actually starting to misfire between drive and overdrive? Is there a change of state? All right. If you can duplicate the condition and ride into it, so to speak, you know, it's happening. You can duplicate this stutter. I'll use your word. If you tap the brake pedal, while you're, you know, two-footed, tap the brake pedal.
Yeah.
Pretend you're from Florida, okay? While you're holding it on the gas, tap the brake pedal. Does the stutter go away when it drops out of overdrive? Okay?
And I haven't tried that one yet. I know when it starts stuttering, if I tap the gas pedal a little bit more, then it smooths right out.
Right.
But then as soon as I get to that speed, as soon as I get to a constant speed on a straightaway,
It's not there.
It starts doing it again.
Oh, it does start doing it again. Okay.
It comes back after I hit the gas pedal a little bit. It'll go away. But then as soon as I stop, you know, doing that and just get to a constant speed, it starts coming back again.
Okay.
It starts stuttering.
So then, you know, you've got a broke vehicle, all right? I'm not worried about whether it's got a check engine light or not. I want to know what conditions it's under. Everybody gets a sore throat on Monday, but the flu doesn't hit them until Wednesday. So Monday, the computer's thinking about it. By Wednesday, the check engine light popped on. And that's what's going on here. Either you haven't driven it long enough, or it's just the right conditions, or it's not going to be a check engine light related issue. Remember, check engine lights only come on for something that's going to affect emissions. Keep that in mind. All right? A check engine light is...
Now, can I...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I get it checked? Can somebody check it out without the engine light being on, or
sure,
they won't check it?
No, I would. Why wouldn't they?
I know I had another car that had the ABS light on and the slippery, you know, thing, the traction control, and they said, well, the engine light's not on. So they didn't even check that vehicle. But
Randy, you want to hear the story about
that fixed.
Randy, you want to hear the story about how I brought my daughter's car home from Pittsburgh last week because the knuckleheads that changed the oil couldn't get the sticker on right, the belly pan, all the screws in it, and it's got a noise in the rear like a wheel bearing or a differential, and I was concerned about taking it back to them for service. You know, just because somebody owns a repair shop doesn't mean they're good at what they do. All right? And there's a lot of good guys out there, and there's a lot of knuckleheads out there. And fact is that you can diagnose anything. You can plug in. As a matter of fact, on a lot of oil changes, we plug scan tools in at the shop. Sometimes we charge, sometimes we don't. Depends on the car, depends on the complicated, depends on what the customer wants. But it's a point of check engine lights. Showing me what's good will always tell me what's bad. Tell me what's good. Tell me what works on this truck. And that's the point I'm trying to get to. If you would try a couple of those things I suggested, know whether or not it's got a pending fault. Listen, it could have a pending fault code, transmission related, but because you drive around it or drive through it, per se, the problem never occurs long enough for the fault to happen. Where I think this is going, it's one of two things. It's either it's an engine issue or a transmission issue. If it's really there and it's not sound, and you have to clarify that in your head by your own admission, whether or not the tailpipe itself is, you know, creating so much noise that you can't hear it. Okay? What I want you to do is it sound or is it a sensation? If it's sound, fix the tailpipes. If it's a sensation, does tapping the brake while the problem is happening, causing it to drop out of overdrive, cause an immediate change of state, an immediate response? If it does, what's the difference in data stream? What's changing? If the engine is running consistent and the same, fuel trim doesn't change, no misfire counts, everything looks correct. And we'll go through the basics, grounds, battery terminals, all the obvious stuff that we would do on a visual. I would think about torque converter chatter. And there's a couple of ways to handle that. How clean is the trans fluid? When was the fluid serviced last? There's some friction modifiers you can add to the fluid to try. I'm not saying it's 100% fix, but if it creates a state of change, you know where you're going. I know you don't want to hear the 14-year-old vehicle might need a trans overhaul, but I'm just trying to give you some options for diagnosing it. Do those things, call me back, and I promise when you do, I'll have the mic on right out of the gate. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
Keep Ron's number handy, 855-560-9900, for when you really need advice on your car. Here's Ron.
Let's see. Mic on, headphones on, sound is good. Is it working right this time, Tom? It must be. I can't hear Tom. Uh-oh.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, just checking.
Actually, it sounds to me. It's you, so it doesn't sound good.
Tom, you know what? In 30 years, I don't think I've ever done that. So, hey, like that, there's a first. That's just too funny.
That was funny, because yeah. I'm sitting here staring at it going, something's different.
and you know, the really funny part is, I didn't want to tell you this because the pressure was on. We, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think the number's like 19. We started in 19 affiliates between last week and this week, and I was going to start to count them out and recognize them. Maybe they don't want to be associated with us anymore
we made a heck of an impression.
So we sure did. They won't forget us anytime soon.
And for those listening who don't know, Ron is in the studio in the Batcave. I'm working out of my home studio to produce the show with COVID protocols. So
right.
Between the two of us, there's bound to be something getting
right. We you know what? We actually been pretty good, Tom.
I know.
Not to pat ourselves on the back, but it's been a good 7-8 month run because we just haven't had too many things go wrong and a lot of things could go wrong. So anyway, let me do what I do best.
You just
Tom.
Jinxed it.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Let me do what I do best. Let me get over to Stan in Minnesota, 48 Ford tractor. A 6-volt wants to make it run like 12. Stan, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. What's going on?
Yeah, I run that 6-volt tractor. In wintertime, I jumper it with 12 volts.
Okay.
Starts good and it runs good, but I take the jumpers off then because I'm worried I'm going to burn the coil and the condenser and the regulator and the generator.
Yeah, it's not great for it. I mean, you can convert a 6-volt tractor. As a matter of fact, this is a big kind of side hobby for a lot of people now. A lot of people are still running their 6-volt tractors, and they're converting them to 12. Now, you know, is I'll say it like this, Stan. Is it a showpiece? I mean, do you plan to show this? You know, or this is a real working tractor.
It's a working tractor.
So, you know, there's companies out there that actually make kits that will sell you what you need in the way of a replacement generator, an alternator, you know, the correct ignition coil if it needs it, the bulbs, if it's got any bulbs mounted on it. Because you can't run a 6-volt bulb on a 12-volt system. You'll burn it out. All right?
You burn a bulb out.
Yeah, you would burn the bulb out because you've got higher voltage.
Yeah, I don't care about the bulb.
Right.
I don't care about the ammeter, bulb, and I don't care about the generator either.
Well, why not? What's going to charge the battery?
Well, what I do is, you know, when I have to plow, I put a battery charger on if it's low. And I charge a battery.
You know, in theory, the ignition coil will work. It depends on which coil's in it. Most 6-volt coils will actually accept a 12-volt system. You might have to put a ballast resistor on it to lower the voltage. But, you know, I guess, Stan, now we're going to start to, you know, pick it apart and kind of do it the wrong way, even though it works. You know, one of the things I would also just because of the age, and it's not because you're running 12 volts instead of 6, but I would just be mindful, you know, what kind of shape is the wiring in? Wiring harness original, or have you updated it over the years?
No, it's original.
It's original. So, you know, most 6-volt wiring harnesses were a very heavy gauge, and 12-volt systems won't draw much through it, so it's the gauge of the wire will handle the voltage. It's just that is the harness brittle and getting older, and if you continue to use it, and I only mention that just because it's, you know, if it's a 48, it's, you know, it's close to 70 years old, give or take. You know, you want to, you know, think about, you know, maybe upgrading the harness. What do you use it for, a plow vehicle? I see.
Yeah.
Here. So,
yeah, snow pulling.
You know, and how big of an area are you plowing?
Oh, not real big. Mm-hmm. Just mostly my yard.
Okay. So, if
but you know, my main concern is that would I burn the coil and the points and the condenser?
Have you been doing it that way in recent past?
Well, I don't let it run long. I just get a jumper started and I disconnect it. So I'm worried about burning, you know, a condenser.
Oh, you just use a 12 volt battery to jump it?
Yep.
Well, then I'm a little confused, Stan. You shouldn't on a jump. But I'm a little confused. You're running it off of a 6-volt battery. You jumper the 6 with the 12.
Yes, but I would like to keep the 12 in.
Okay, so then just go buy a kit. That's my point. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, where do I get those kits? You have any idea?
No, you can Google it. Convert a 6-volt tractor or a 6-volt charging system to 12.
Okay.
You'll see a ton of information come up. You know all the necessary components. But like I said, this is a big, I won't say hobby, but this is a big deal the last couple of years because they're finding that the older tractors with no computers on them last and work a whole lot better than the modern day stuff. So, yes, you can do it. Very simple, step-by-step instructions are out there. Good luck to you, Stan. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, at 855-560-9900. Let's go over to Matt in Ohio and see what's going on. Matt, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for waiting so patiently.
I have two quick questions, one about oil pressure and one about rust prevention.
Okay.
I have a 1990 F-250, and the oil gauge is, like, after it warms up about 5 minutes, it just jumps around like crazy. But I've been driving the truck around. There's no other problems other than that. It's just the oil gauges. And so I was planning to put oil pressure. I was trying to get the actual oil pressure with an oil pressure gauge, so like an actual oil pressure gauge. What kind of numbers should I be looking for?
Well, let me ask you this. Are you seeing, what engine is this? 5.8?
This is the 5.8, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so a 5.8 should see somewhere between 30 and 60 PSI at 2,000 RPM. You know, and you'll see it drop lower, obviously, at idle. you know, what's minimum. You're probably going to see, you might see 8 to 10, 10 to 12. You know, the real question is, does it actually have oil pressure? You know, I have a little, I have a couple of concerns here, and maybe I'm answering this wrong, but a 5.8, 5.8s were common for a couple of things. Number one, they will clog the oil pickup screen. They will also round out the drive. There's a hexagonal shaped push rod, for lack of a better way to say it, that comes off the bottom of the distributor and drives down into the oil pump. And the end at the oil pump will round out, and it'll cause an erratic oil pressure reading. We've had those back in the day when there were more of these. So, you know, yeah, I get what you're doing. Checking for correct oil pressure is the absolute thing to do rather than just try putting a sending unit on it. High mileage, Matt?
Yeah, high mileage, but unfortunately it's only five digits, so it's hard to tell exactly how high it is. It's either like 210 or 310 or who knows.
Yeah. You know, it, because, and the issue will become, if it does have erratic oil pressure, you know, if you drive this with a mechanical gauge on it, you see oil pressure acting erratically where it's up and down, up and down, up and down. It could be the drive in the oil pump that's stripped out or rounded out or starting to round out, or it could be the screen that's clogged and it's just starving for oil. Although generally a clogged screen was more just had low oil pressure, period. It just never was good. So it could be the other. Now, you could get good, solid mechanical oil pressure, and at that point, then it's a sender, you know, or that's where I would start. Just try and get yourself a good quality sender, because a lot of the stuff you'll find out in the aftermarket world, you have to be careful. You know, I hate to say the word, but if China made it, it's, you know, what part of China? And, you know, there is an issue with Chinese-made parts. It's we see more problems with them. We just try and avoid them at all costs, you know? So just you got to do some testing. Second question.
Second question. Since over the years, lots of oil has leaked down there. And as you say, it's rust proof.
Right.
After oil leaks everywhere. What would be wrong with using waste oil to rust proof cars in general?
The mess it'll leave in the driveway, number one.
Yeah.
And then number two, if it's, you know, if you're getting it on electrical wiring modules, connectors, not great, you know,
Nothing like that. It would be only on the frame, like obviously not on exhaust parts or not on wires and stuff like that.
If you're going to go through that, why don't you just paint the frame?
Yeah, because it's cheaper.
Right. No, I get it. Listen, I was just curious. So let me ask you this question then, as long as we're talking about money. What if that vehicle needs an engine, which it might? What if that 5.8 needs an engine? Would you stick an engine in it?
No, probably not. I'll probably get the five-speed transmission out of it and put it in my Bronco scrap the rest
of it. So does this have the creeper trans? Low?
Yeah.
That's a heck of a plow truck, Matthew. It was. It really is.
It's kind of just a farm truck now.
Yeah, is it kind of rotted away?
Yeah. It's pretty. It has a really nice flatbed on it, though.
Right.
Metal flatbed. So, well, I don't know. Someone will get it, though. I'll probably end up getting rid of it, though, when the engine's completely done.
Well, and I guess what I'm thinking about is, you know, I always look at costs, right? So, you know, if you put a replacement engine in it, you know, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000. You know, maybe you could find a different body somewhere from a dry state, swap the cab over. It's a farm vehicle. If the suspension and the chassis and the rest of it's in good shape, you know, 2 weeks worth of busted knuckles, you'll end up with a really nice truck. And then when you take the body off the frame, you can paint everything and, you know, probably make it nicer than to use it for farm work. But why not have, I'm just being an advocate here, brother. Why not have a good, reliable vehicle? Just saying.
I do. I have that would be my car. Right. Good, reliable, and cheap on gas. This is more of a passion thing. And picking stuff up from the store.
Yeah, you know, and how long can you keep it going, maybe? You know, one thing I've always said, if you want to convince somebody about whether or not they should fix what they got, if they really need that vehicle, Matthew, go price a new vehicle.
Oh, they're insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy how expensive.
$60,000 to get into the truck market. So, you know, yep. just something to think about. All right, kiddo?
I thanks, Ron.
You're appreciate very welcome. It. I appreciate you being there. You're welcome. You're welcome. Terry, Tennessee, 99 Subaru. What's going on?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I've got a 99 Subaru Legacy.
Okay.
170,000, small engine.
Right.
And about every other year, it has to have the mass airflow sensor new. Otherwise, I get a dead spot at low acceleration. You have to punch the throttle up high to get going.
Okay.
And it gets a lot worse in cold weather.
What kind of environment are you using it in, Terry? Normal everyday driving?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take it to northern Missouri. It'll hit a lot of zero, low zero.
Right. You know, good quality air filter in it?
Yeah, they put it in new.
Who put it in
they
new?
They ran a smoke. Well, first shop gave up, and he didn't charge me anything.
Right.
And he sent me to a foreign car shop here in the county, and they ran a smoke test, I believe. And they said, you know, put in the mass airflow sensor. First, they tried to clean it. That didn't work. And okay. That fixed it for a couple of years. Do I just keep doing that? Is it going to get a lot worse?
So let me ask you this. These mass airflow sensors that you're changing every other year, I'm going to say something I already know the answer to. New sensor from Subaru?
I don't know.
Right.
I didn't ask him what guy's parts.
Yeah, I would find out quality of parts. I'll tell you what, Terry, stay put. Let me pull over, take a pause. We'll continue when I get back. We're on Andy and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Andy and the Car Doctor. Terry, you're still there, sir.
Yes, I'm still here.
So the thoughts that go through my mind are, you know, when this mass airflow fails, you know, what fails? Is there physical debris on the sensor or it just stops working? Do you know the answer to that one?
Well, when he cleaned it, it helped it for a little while.
Okay.
But really, it was a waste of money. For $300, I can put the whole thing in new.
Right. Well, are you
sending $70 after cleaning it?
Right. Are you putting a new mass air in? You know, my point is a sensor every 2 years. Listen, there's a couple of things that can happen here. You know, how good is the air filter and how well does it seal? All right. So is it a quality filter, you know, a good rubber seal around the housing? Is the housing in good shape? Or is there any, if there's debris on the mass airflow, it's coming from somewhere, right? It's right. We've got to agree to that. There's dirt coming in from somewhere. If it's getting past the air filter, the mass airflow is going to suffer. It's going to get coated and it'll fail in a short period of time. So that's like the most important. All right. Number one. Number two, you know, wiring going up to the sensor. There's going to be a ground. There's going to be a 5-volt reference. There's going to be a signal return. And they likely put the intake air temp sensor, I believe, in 99 in the sensor itself. Does anything else read out of spec? You know, is there a ground issue? Has anybody voltage dropped the ground connection? You know, grounds on an older vehicle are always something to be concerned about. That's number two. All right. And then number three is the easy one. You know, whose brand of part is it? If it's something rebuilt, allegedly rebuilt, I don't see how that's possible. You know what? I've taken the tours of the plants. I've watched the manufacturers assemble electronics. And I've come to the conclusion that unless you have the ability to test down to the nano degree of the transistor, of the chip, of the circuit board, of the, you know, it's just all they can do, in my opinion, from what I've seen, and somebody proved me wrong, all these that are selling reman sensors, unless they're changing the board and the circuitry, they're testing it. It tests good. They put it in a fresh housing or clean up the housing and ship it. You know, if that sensor had an intermittent problem, and I'm not saying that's your case, but if that sensor had an intermittent problem, for example, how are they going to catch it? They're not going to drive it, you know, 7 Tuesdays until, you know, the car acts up and it's a bit. So I get a little squeamish about aftermarket remanufactured electronic sensors. They've got to be, you know, new quality stuff or from a quality remanufacturer. I'm not saying they're not out there. I just get a little, you know, I question it. So
I wondered where he was getting his parts.
Right. So, you know, listen, I could buy a $50 mass airflow sensor for that car and tell you it's $300. What do you know? You know, it's what's the quality level? And like I always tell everybody, we see something fail twice, I'm going to the vendor and saying, okay, you know, where's the fault? Because if I'm having the problem, everybody should be having the problem. And that also tells me, is it unique to me or is it unique just to, you know, that part that it's occurring everywhere? So a couple of questions for you, Terry. Go back, ask them. You know where to find me, and I'll be glad to talk to you. We'll kind of go over it again. Let's pull over and take a pause for the cause. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. The Car Doctor, Walter, State College, PA. How are you today, Walter? What can I do for you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I have a 2018 Highlander. It is not the hybrid one.
Right.
And about 2 weeks ago, there was a potent propane smell. And if you search online, everything points to the catalytic converter. It's not. It doesn't have the egg smell.
Right.
And I searched everywhere. I took it to the shop. They said they couldn't find it. I have the car back. And then I searched under the rear carpet. And I also have WeatherTech floor mats. And I haven't hauled anything in it. But I lifted up the rear to the point where I got to the metal. And there was about a third of a quart of axle fluid or
gear oil,
right?
Where did that
come from?
You own the car since new, Walter?
Yes. Yep.
Kind of strange. There's no way for gear oil to get up into the passenger compartment. There's a vent, but the vent is attached. Right. Yeah. There's a vent that's attached underneath, and you know it doesn't enter the cabin at any point. There's no reason for them to do that. So,
right, there's no telltale signs where this came from. The factory carpet even has rubber underneath it.
Right.
So, I mean, there would be a stain or a trail,
right,
but there is zero of where this came from.
You know, did you find something that was left over from the assembly line? You know, I've seen stranger things. So let me ask you this. You cleaned it up, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
You know, you cleaned it up.
But there's still a hint of the smell.
Of the gear oil.
A hint of, every once in a while you'll catch a whiff of it.
Well, when you cleaned it up, did you wash it, soap and water wash it, or just wipe up the excess and there's a little bit of residue there?
I did the wiped it up first, but then did the soap and water.
Right.
And then also used a cutter.
Right, to cut the grease.
An oil cutter like 409. Right.
Yeah, that's fine. And that should work. You know, you might have the smell for a while until it dissipates, but you're doing it right. Now, getting it off the bottom of the carpet might be a chore because, you know, once gear oil gets saturated into the rubber, you know, is that rear rubber section, that rear carpet section removable?
No, because the seats are on top of it.
Right.
I can reach in.
Yeah.
But I can reach into about how far as it goes.
Right.
But as I said, there's no idea how this got there.
Yeah. It's got to be from assembly. But, you know, there should be nothing coming in. I mean, just for giggles, put it up in the air at a shop and look, you know, did they run a vent line up inside the cabin for some reason? But I can't even think where they would. You know, that somebody would have to go, you'd have to go out of your way to do it wrong, if you know what I'm saying, to make that work. So, you know, clean it up the best you can. Let's watch it in the future. The propane smell, I've had this occurrence. I've investigated everything from, is it in the interior? Is it the leather of the seat? Is it the catalytic converter? And keep in mind, this probably doesn't have a lot of miles on it. If this is a CAT issue, you know, it's going to be under warranty. CATs are 880. So don't go paying for something that's, you know, not necessarily your problem.
Right.
You know, the only other thing I could suggest is, do you use one brand of fuel consistently?
No.
do you notice it? And I, this is a long shot, Walter, but I just want to leave you with something to think about. You know, different brands, different blends of fuel will cause different reactions to the cat. Stay with one known brand. See if the problem continues. If the problem goes away for some reason, it's having a reaction to whatever fuel you might have been using. Try that. Call me back. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.